Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Today, I am joined by Jenny Magana to discuss her brand new album, Teeth, an eclectic mishmash of spacey psychedelic instrumentals, krautrock, and indie with a witchy flair. Jenny and I discuss why she decided to plan her album release around the full moon, touring in Mitski's band as a bass player, growing up in Bakersfield, and so much more. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode.
Hello?
Hello. Where are you based, by the way?
Los Angeles.
Where in Los Angeles?
East side, so like Eagle Rock.
Nice. I've never been, so what are your favorite things about Eagle Rock?
You can see behind me, it's quite sunny. So that's all of LA, I guess, but definitely one of my favorite things. I love my proximity to my friends, I guess, and some very good restaurants. I don't spend a ton of time out, I'm not gonna lie, but I also love that I live in a place with a driveway, which is not something you can necessarily do with some other places. So I guess I love the cheapness.
Right. Yeah. It's nice to have a driveway.
Oh, man. I lived in New York for 10 years and we had a car for some of that and street cleaning. It was a madhouse all the time. And it wasn't even as bad where we lived as in some places, but it took up so much mental space. And now, no.
Yeah. Well, I'm in New York right now, as you can probably hear. There's an ambulance just going off. Classic. Wouldn't be an episode of this podcast without an ambulance siren somewhere. I live in Chelsea right now, but a lot of my friends are in Brooklyn and Ridgewood now. Ridgewood's really popping right now.
Yeah, a lot of my friends live there.
Yeah, so where were you based around here when you lived in New York?
My first year, I lived in Astoria, Queens, and that was awesome, but nobody ever wanted to visit me. And so I moved to Bushwick the next year with some friends from college. And I basically lived in Bushwick just one stop further on the L every year, a couple years. Yeah, so mostly that. But I worked at Chelsea Piers, so I spent a lot of time in Chelsea.
Oh, yeah. Where was there a certain place at the pier that you worked?
Yeah, I did. I worked for a tourist photography company for like 5 years. And they were out of, oh gosh. So they were working on the Spirit Cruises, which I think is like Pier 62, maybe. Maybe I'm making that up. But yeah, wherever the big blue building is.
Yeah. And so I also understand that you like grew up in California, in Bakersfield. Do you want to tell me a little about the early stages of your life there?
Yeah. So Bakersfield, I don't know how much you are familiar with Bakersfield. It's like country music, new metal was born in Bakersfield, basically, and farmers, which kind of shaped a lot of me as a human, actually. My family had a fruit stand for, I don't know, the first 10 years of my life or something. And that's when I started really getting into music because I was so bored. And there was a church down the road from the fruit stand and they had a piano. So that's my first instrument was piano. And there's just not a lot to do there. There's more now, but it was a lot of like, well, I guess I'll play music. And go, you know, be like, go to all these shows and try new instruments and things. So that was kind of like my whole life. I think that's basically all I do now too.
Yeah. And when you would go to all those shows, would you often leave town to go to them? Or was there like an interesting sort of hub of like local music there as well that you frequented?
Yeah, all of the bigger shows were out of Bakersfield, like outside of Bakersfield. The only time I would see a famous act was at the fairgrounds, like once a year. But I think the local scene is and was like very vibrant. And there was a lot of places, maybe not a lot of places, but there were places that people could play and just go, and every night there'd be music. And they weren't always super glamorous. But I mean, that was my first shows in high school were at those venues too.
Yeah. And when you eventually moved to Boston to go to Berkeley, did you really like just need a change of scenery and location? Were you trying to get like as far away from the West Coast as possible? Or was it just by happenstance that you were like, okay, I got into Berkeley. It's a once in a lifetime thing. So I'll go.
It's going to seem so random, but I had no interest in leaving California. I have always thought it's a very cool state. There's so much for me to do. I mean, it's a large state, but I've loved living on the West Coast. And most of the colleges I applied to were on the West Coast, in LA, really. And I got a random mailer for Berklee College of Music, and I'd never heard of it before. And I was like, well, I'll apply there too, which feels insane. I don't know why we give 17-year-olds the choice to where, like, in the country they're going to move, because no one makes a decision based on logic. And I totally just randomly applied. And then I got in and I went to visit. And it just seemed like the school was a good mix of the contemporary stuff that I was into, and but still honoring a lot of the classical stuff I cared about. And so that was the main draw. And then the other thing is, I was like, nothing is going to take me away from my home state if I don't do this. Like, there's no, at least there's a way I can like leave and explore the world and then come back. Whereas if I went to college in LA, I'd probably just stay in LA for the rest of my life. And so it wasn't really that I wanted to get away, but that I know it's good for me to experience something else. And that was a good way to do it.
Yeah. And were those experiences at all what you expected? Like, what was the biggest thing that surprised you, I guess? Because I am from Massachusetts. So like, those are my stomping grounds. So just like curious about like, what your expectations were and what it was like.
Where in Mass are you from?
I'm from Acton, which is where Steve Carell grew up.
Oh,
so that's
that.
Our claim to fame, our nice. One claim to fame.
My husband is from Saugus, so I go back to Massachusetts every year for Christmas and stuff. I think the entire thing was such a culture shock to me. The way that people drive, because I'm such a California driver. I'm so glad that I learned how other people drive. The way that people cross the street, how I would make eye contact and smile at everyone, and everyone looked at me like I was insane. And I was like, oh, okay. And just how real people are. I mean, I really love it, actually, but it was definitely a major adjustment. And I was like, I didn't even realize that people were going to be so different. I mean, I had never lived outside of my hometown at this point. I was 17 and was like pretty sheltered and was just like, oh, people are different in different places. Yeah, it took a lot of getting used to, but also I remember trying to figure out how everyone knew when to cross the street and almost getting run over so many times because I just didn't understand traffic. It was wild. Yeah, it was like the whole thing was a crazy experience.
Yeah, East Coast drivers do not play around.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the cold. Who knows?
But they're paying attention.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I was like, you drive, but you also do your makeup, or you like eat, or you make a phone call, like, and everyone's just kind of like spacing out. And I was like, no, these people are on it.
Yeah.
Malicious sometimes, but like everyone's got, it's like a risk. There's a level of respect to the insanity, I think.
Right, right. Yeah, for sure. And when you went to Berkeley, did you just, you just did the 4-year college stint?
Yeah, I actually graduated in 3 years because I didn't want to spend any more money.
Smart.
Yeah.
You got out while you could. That's
yeah,
good.
So I had some like transfer credits and I took summer school and I left.
So like when you graduated, what was your life like in that sort of in-between stage? Were you doing a lot of thinking about like where you wanted to go from there? Or was it like immediately clear what you were going to do? And from that moment on, was it just like, go, go, go?
No, I had no idea what I was doing. And I graduated and was like, oh, it's a similar spot to something that I'm experiencing now, actually, which is I've made plans to get to this point in my life. And now I don't have plans further. So I'm a little bit, I mean, I'm able to handle it now as an adult. Like, okay, you're not in control of your life and you can kind of figure it out as you go. But in college, I was like, oh, my plan was to graduate college. And like, now what? Where do I go? Like, what, who gives me a job? Like, how do I find a place to live? And so I moved to New York, but that was mostly because A, it sounded kind of scary. And I was like, well, now's the time because I'm not going to move to California and then move back to New York. And B, I didn't have enough money to make the cross-country move. And it was way cheaper to rent a U-Haul and just drive to New York from Boston. And so that was the only thing I kind of had planned out, was like, I got to go somewhere. And like, New York seems like a good place to start. And I moved to Astoria because one or two people I knew that had graduated Berkeley lived there. And it just seemed like as good a place as any. And I knew that I wanted to play music. I did go to music school for that reason, you know, but I didn't know what that looked like or how to do it or anything. So I just kind of figured it out from there. It was pretty blind grasping for a long time.
Yeah. And so like, what were the first sort of forays into that world before you sort of got to where you are currently?
The first job I had in New York, I found on Craigslist, and I was a receptionist for a recording studio that didn't have a ton of clients. Like, it may have been just a front, but from that, I got a different job at a different recording studio that was very legitimate. And I started playing music with some of those people. We would do a little bit of recording. We would jam after, you know, in people's houses and stuff. So that was kind of my first, like, oh, I'm playing music with people. And that's when I first started my own band, because I knew a couple people and they were all musicians. So I was like, you should all just be in my band.
Yeah. And what was like, what were the biggest things you picked up but when you started like practicing as a band, like as a unit? And what were some of the biggest things it taught you about like playing with a group versus playing solo?
I didn't know how to play solo at the time. And I had been in a band before because I've been a bass player for so many people in college, obviously. Like, I was always in a supporting role. And that's kind of how I thought of music. And then my own stuff, I just kind of secretly tried stuff out, but I never had the bravery, I guess, to go out and try to play that in front of other people. And so that was a big learning curve, because to be a supportive member is important, but also to be in charge is important, and to make your, like, this is actually what I wanted this to be, and being able to say that. So that was my first time doing that. And I definitely made some mistakes, but that was the biggest lesson there.
And eventually you get to a point where you're playing bass for Mitski and Lady Lamb. So what was your foray into that territory initially? Like, how did you, like, because nowadays, like, I'm sure everyone wants to know, like, oh, how did you come into Mitski's orbit? But, like, I'm sure that was pretty major, like, when it started, or even later down the road when, like, things really started happening for her.
Yeah, how does anyone get any gig, really? Someone asked me to play. I was still playing. I was touring as a bass player in college and then after college in New York, and I was making $0, but I had a day job so I could kind of still pay rent because this is something I really wanted to do. And then somebody saw me play and was like, oh, I actually, so-and-so is looking for a bass player. And a lot of times they were situations where they were looking for an upright bass player, which is a little bit more rare, and someone who could sing, which is a little bit more rare. And some people were specifically looking for women, which is really narrowing it down. So some of those opportunities, people would just be like, oh, girls. And that's kind of how it happened for all of them, Mitski included. I mean, my friend Marie played keys for Mitski, and she met them at Brooklyn Steel when Mitski came through and played, and Marie was doing sound, and they had a really good rapport. And then they were like, oh, cool, well, we're actually looking for a keys player. Do you know anyone? And Marie was like, me. And so that's how she got introduced, and then she just gave me a suggestion, which is kind of always how that works. And so I got an email from Mitski just as one of my day jobs was kind of like finishing. I was kind of on this freelance gig that was going to end within the month or something. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do for work. I really want to play music. I'm so stressed about money though. And she was like, hello, would you like to be in my band? And I thought it was spam because I was like, nobody just emails like that. Like somebody, there's got to be something, but.
Insane. She just went into her personal email and was like, hello.
Yeah. I mean, they probably do things a little bit differently now, but not really. I know a lot of the band was also just like recommendations because you want them to get along with the people you're already playing with. So they're like, do you know anyone who's talented and a nice human? And then they make some calls and see how they're going to fit in. But it's all pretty casual.
Yeah. I've found a lot of this stuff really does happen through word of mouth. It's pretty awesome. And it's a small world for sure.
Yeah. Sometimes I think it's not, I mean, I'm so like grateful for my opportunities, but I'm sometimes wonder if people get left behind because of that. But I also think it's more real than submitting a resume or like a cover letter. So, and there's still a mix, you know, but.
Right. Right. Yeah. So you've described your solo material as a witchy rock. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that's an apt description of your work, and how did you initially land on that?
I think it's an apt description, especially for this record, because I kind of think a lot of the songs on this record are more meditative. They kind of go for a while and draw you in, and I think of those as spells. And also it just talks about the natural world a lot. And I thought it was going to be fun because I was releasing it on the full moon. And I honestly had that idea because on my birthday, the band bought me a tarot reading. And she was like, yeah, there's something going to happen on the full moon, like something important for your like artistry. And I was like, oh, well, I'll just do that. And that's already fitting in with everything else. So kind of luck and chance and fate.
Yeah, definitely. And also, like, that what's really fascinating about tarot readings is you can take from them whatever you will and manifest whatever is prophesized, I guess.
Yeah, totally. That's my favorite thing about like tarot or oracle, whatever decks, is it's interesting to see what your first thought is when presented with something. Because it's always going to be, you know, pretty general. And it's gonna be like, well, it usually has something to do with this. Can you think of anything in your life that is this? And that's going to reveal a lot about the person, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I understand too that when writing this record, like during the pandemic, you sort of aimed to create an experience that reflected the strangeness that you were feeling.
Yeah, it was like the world was so alien to me all of a sudden. I mean, A, because it was different. No one was out anymore. There were all these signs up. The businesses were all closed. But also just being in my home, which luckily I'd moved to LA at that point, so I had like a little bit more space than I did in Bushwick. But we planted a garden, and I would just sit out there like every morning and just watch it grow slowly, and was just like, this is wild how this stuff works. And I think another part going into the witchy rock is just an awe of the way that nature works.
Yeah. And what was the biggest difference in the process of creating this body of work versus your earlier material?
I think there are so many things I could point to. One of which is just physical limitations. Like, I was really learning how to play guitar when I put out my first EP, or how to play guitar for me. And then You're Not a Morning Person was all about me exploring the guitar and how I fit into it. And then this record, guitar is in there, but it's more of like I was learning about synths, and I was really interested in getting back into woodwind arrangements. And it's the first time I put string arrangements on there. And I feel like I had less limitations for one instrument. I also think on a psychological level, I maybe had something to prove previously, because people had told me, like, you have to be good at guitar, and like, you're not, or whatever. There was just kind of this thing of like, I was like, yeah, I can shred, I can do this. And when you're by yourself, especially for as long as everyone was over COVID, I kind of don't have anything to prove anymore. You know, it was just for me. And yeah, I think those are probably the two main differences.
Right. And this project in particular sounds really trippy and like spacey. And people have described it before, I noticed, as like krautrocky. Were any krautrock records in rotation by happenstance while you were creating it, or was this just purely coming from like the state of how you were feeling and the alienness that you like wanted to like sort of bring into the fore soundscapes?
Yeah, something that I thought was really fun about how this record was made was I definitely wasn't trying to fit into anything, and I wasn't necessarily trying to emulate things that I've heard. I was just fully experimenting. So sometimes I would be like, oh, I want to, how do they make that sound? And then I would fail, but it would sound kind of cool and something different would come out of it. But I made so many songs and little instrumentals and just so much. I made so much stuff during this period of time. And then someone else came in and kind of picked what they thought went together and made a cohesive record. My friend Mike DeSanto did that and also mastered it and chose the track order. And so I think it came into something that's kind of cohesive and that has a distinctive genre sound, but it was not on purpose. And it could have gone any way depending on who selected the songs, you know?
Definitely. I think everything like really fell into place, like how it was meant to, though, for sure.
Yeah, I'm really happy with that. And also, it's funny because Mike DeSanto lives in Brooklyn, and he just happened to be out here for something else. And he stayed with us, I think, for a night. He's mostly my husband's friend. They used to be in a band together. I guess they still are. And he was like, oh, what have you been doing? And I was like, oh, I'm just making these demos. Like, I'll send them to you. And then he just was like, okay, well, these are the things I think you should put on. And I was like, okay, well, that sounds great. I don't want to choose.
Yeah, definitely. Whose choice was it to put the singles out in the order that they were released in?
It's chaos. It was mostly me. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to start with Girl in Chains because I like that song a lot. And I feel like it's a good statement into what this record is going to be like, you know, it's going to have guitar, but it's not going to be like the other ones. And also I was a little afraid of doing some of the PR by myself because I've historically not been great at following up on emails or finding the right places for my music. And I'm a little bit self-sabotaging in that way. And true to form, like I tried, but I still self-sabotage quite a bit for my first three singles, and then reached out to Jamie, who put out my first EP, and they were like, okay, well, what songs do you have left that you want to put out as singles? And those are the only ones that I could think of. So it was all pretty patchwork.
And do you want to tell me a little more about like the themes and the specific singles?
I think Girl in Chains and Break Free and a few of these have this theme of being trapped, but it being of your own making. And Afraid of Everybody kind of ties into that too, because a lot of it is like anxiety is being trapped, but it is of your own making. And that's something that I dealt with a lot in this record. And I also think something that's nice and sets up the record is that they are all still varied topics. Even if it is like, this is thematically what's going on, like Beside You is kind of about somebody else's anxiety and like what it's like to be trapped in their own being and their own prison of their making and stuff like that. And exploring the relationship to self, but also to those around you, I guess, is the major theme. And I wanted both of those to be reflected.
Yeah. And listening to the album, like I was getting like a all like hit with all the maximalist sounds, and it was like a very like grand sort of bombastic experience. It was like very, very different from the other project that you have, the duo with Emily Moore. Mm-hmm. And I guess like my question is, what do you think creates like that sort of schism for you personally in these like drastically different moods that vary from project to project?
I think we all contain multitudes. And I think, you know, most people don't listen to just one genre of music. And I think that most people don't make one genre of music. And this was an exploration for me. And I think it really accurately portrays how I felt at the time and sometimes how I feel now. And I also really appreciate like a sparser, poppier sound. You know, like I need also energy to balance out the other stuff, but I had a hard time doing that by myself. It's not really coming naturally to me. And so something with a duo is helpful because you have somebody else helping you steer the ship. Yeah, and Emily's got a solo project too called Total Brutal. And it is, I feel like if you listen to my project and her project and then our project together, you can tell exactly where we met in the middle because it's like a little combo of both. Yeah, I think we all contain that within ourselves. I think it's like everyone probably does.
Definitely. And for some reason, like that scares a lot of people, the fact that we all contain multitudes.
Yeah, because it's hard to wrap your mind around, you know, feels safe to feel like you're in control, and it feels safe to feel like you can put something or someone in a box, including yourself.
Yeah. A lot of people just want like things that are easy to digest and easy to understand. But it's never always like that. It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it does sound great. I totally get that as a person who's generally like got a fearful outlook on life if I'm not careful. But I also have come face to face so many times with the fact that I'm not in control and that there's so many sides to one situation and one perspective that I'm mm-hmm. like, okay.
Yeah.
I can admit that it's true.
Yeah. And is anybody really in control when we think about it?
No, no
one. Never.
Is.
Yeah.
It's just the illusion of control, which I dig. Sometimes I do stuff just to have that, you know?
Right. And I also, like, one thing you were able to control, I guess, like, is this whole moon situation, the full moon. And I guess, like, what makes, I guess, like the celestial world, and like we mentioned tarot readings earlier, and sort of fascinating to you, and how would you say that that's intrinsically tied with this album? Because like I find that's like really true of astrology too, is that it's like it's accessible but also like gives you like work. I don't know if that's how I would, but yeah
totally. So the full moon, in particular, in my opinion, is a time for like completion of a cycle. It's time for like letting things go. And I think it's a great time for me to release this record because I have had my control. I've made the record exactly how I wanted to. I've put all of my feelings into there. I've like, you know, made this thing, and now it's time for me to let this go. Like, this is no longer my record. This is a record for the world, and people are going to do whatever they want with it, and I have no control over that. And that is beautiful. And then specifically, it's going to be in the spring, which is like the worm moon is opening up into the spring, which is, I just think, amazing, because like I start the record with a song about my garden and kind of about spring. And it's not about new life. It's more about like the wonder of the life we have, but it does kind of feel to me like growth and new life. So that's why.
Yeah, definitely. And I was also curious to know, since you, a lot of your work has also been collaborative and with and or for other people, have you ever worked with somebody or for somebody that you had serious creative differences with? And like, if so, like, how did you navigate that?
It happens all the time. Even, I mean, and the thing is, everybody that I work with now is somebody that I deeply respect, but it doesn't mean I don't have major creative differences with them. In a lot of situations where I'm playing for someone, the hierarchy is pretty clear. We can have creative differences and I can voice my opinion, but ultimately it's not my project. And so I just am who I am, but I also provide a service and I'm happy to do that because they have a vision and it isn't mine. For somebody that I'm collaborating with, it's a little bit different because it's less clear who gets the final say or if that even matters or if that's a thing. And so it's kind of like a relationship. You just kind of have to communicate through it and pick your battles. And ultimately, it's helpful that I trust and respect everybody that I work with because they can open to your eyes to like, oh, that's not what I would have done, but that is cool, maybe even cooler. And it's sometimes tough, but that's kind of the beauty of it too, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Like at the end of the day, it really comes down to ego.
Yeah, which is tough.
Yeah. It's like, and whether or not you're willing to let like that win and or be the saboteur, or if you want to like take a step back and sort of like knock it down a peg, I guess.
Yeah, it's really good for people as humans, I think, to collaborate. I have a really easy time collaborating with Emily. And it's, I think, just partially because we're pretty good at our communication. And we're also good at recognizing like, oh, this is a hill I want to die on. And this is not. So I'm like, this is your thing. You care more than me, I think. Like, why don't you just take the lead on this one? And then every once in a while, I'm like, no. You literally cannot win this one. I like feel so passionately about this. And that's kind of what a collaboration is, you know, it's give and take and knowing when to do so.
Yeah, definitely. What is an album that was released in the past year that totally like struck a nerve with you?
I have been obsessed with this artist in New York, Gia Margaret. They, I don't know how much if you've heard of her, but I don't think she's like huge or anything, but she was more singer-songwritery, and I think she had like a vocal injury or something happened where she wasn't able to use her voice. And so she started making some ambient, a little bit more ambient records, and she put out something this year called Romantic Piano, I think. And I just, because it's an exploration in the way that I think I'm trying to explore, and it's got some kind of inspiredness to it, because I think it's like making the best out of a new situation, I think it just changed my world. So stoked.
That's really awesome. Yeah. The name sounded familiar, and I think I discovered her because she was added to like a magazine picks playlist in 2023 or something.
That makes sense.
But that's really cool. I'll definitely have to delve a little more into the project because I love stories like that and how it breeds like new chapters in artistry.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't wish ill on anyone, but I love when people overcome it and make it into something new.
Yes. I also wanted to ask about your current relationship with, I guess, like touring and like van life, or like it maybe bus life. Mitski's at that point, right?
Yeah, I haven't done a van there in a minute.
So, like, when you have like moments of burnout and such, as everyone does at any point in any industry or life stages.
Yeah.
What is sort of the best way to navigate that? I know like for some people it's like meditation and stuff like that, but when you like reach those boiling points where you're truly at a point of like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like what are the biggest things that bring you like back down to earth?
Okay, well, meditation's a good one. There's something on pretty much any tour that I have done that I maintain works for me, which is like getting out of my head and into my body. So usually it's like some kind of workout, like running, elliptical, like something like that. But I will put my all into it. And if I can't do that, I will literally just like shake my body. I think that I tend to get stuck there because it's difficult to process things, especially during burnout and especially on the road. And so a lot of emotions tend to just get stuck in my body and stay there, and I get sick and I feel awful and I don't know why. And so for me, a lot of that is just like, get it out. Like, and I can't necessarily go into a corner and weep because I'm doing something. And so, yeah, I really recommend that. It's great. Also afterwards, I always try to get a massage.
Yeah, I've been in need of a massage lately, so maybe you mentioning a massage is a sign that I just need to get one done.
Yeah, you really, I mean, I don't know, but it sounds like it to me. And I really do think it's taken me a lot of time to come to this conclusion. I still don't always do it. Like, I just got back from tour and I did not get a massage because I think of it as a luxury, because it is. But it's also like, as a musician, my entire being, like my physical health is really important to me, and I do a lot to my body on the road, and I actually do need some physical care. And so it's like, well, it's a little bit like health, actually.
Yeah, exactly. It's, yeah, that's the like same relationship that I have with it. It's just like, do I have $200 to drop right now or even $90? But yeah. It's also like, it should be a necessity. It's like going to the doctor.
Yeah. Like, I also got, my mom bought me a Theragun. So I guess that's probably another reason I didn't feel as urgent, but mm-hmm. I think I bring it on the road and I massage myself like every day.
Theragun.
Mm-hmm. Should put an ad for Theragun in here.
This episode is sponsored by Theragun. Like that, there we go. I said it, so now they have to give me money. That's how it works.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, so I'm really excited for the full album to come out because I think it's some of like the best like space rock, kraut rock, witchy rock, whatever you want to call it. Like that's the point, right? It's we contain multitudes, so
if you take anything away from this, yeah, is that we contain multitudes, whether we want to or not.
Yeah. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for hopping on for a chat with me. I had a blast.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you again to Maganya for joining me today. Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.